Good evening. It's good to see each and every one of you. We're delighted to have you with us tonight. Tonight we're going to be looking at a lesson on drug addiction. And I'm going to give you some statistics in the very beginning of our lesson tonight that will pertain to the state of Ohio and also help us to see that we have entered into a very serious situation in regards to drug addiction. I don't know if you deal with this particular problem. Many families do, many marriages do, as a result of the proliferation of this particular situation in our country. It's one of the things that I think that Christians need to be tuned into, because we live in a culture that is increasingly becoming more addicted to various types of things, and especially we think of drug addiction. But there's things like sexual addiction that are also problematic, and it's also a growing problem in America today. And these things also impact Christians, impact our lives, sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly. I made mention of this in a sermon some time back in terms of the cost. So we think we're taxpayers, and so really this doesn't bother us, but the reality of it is it hits us right in the pocketbook. And so drug addiction affects everybody, either directly or indirectly. And so tonight I thought I would look at a lesson on this. And tonight the main feature of our study is going to be giving you some signs that you can look for that would indicate addiction. And sometimes this may be helpful if you're thinking of yourself, and sometimes it's helpful if you think about a loved one or family member, that you would want to know some of these kinds of things so that you could really pinpoint what the problem is. In 2011, there were 1,765 deaths due to drug overdoses in Ohio. That's a rather large number. An Ohioan died every 5 hours from a drug overdose in 2011. Every 5 hours. From 1997 to 2010, the average number of painkillers such as Oxycontin prescribed per Ohioan jumped from 7 to 67. Heroin-involved deaths are continuing to jump from 16%, which is 233 in 2008, to a high of 24.1%, or 426, of all drug overdose fatalities in 2011. Since 1999, drug overdose deaths have leaped by 440% in Ohio. Problem's not getting better, it's getting worse. For the fourth straight year, unintentional drug overdoses continue to be the leading cause of injury-related deaths in the Buckeye State, topping traffic crashes, suicides, and falls, which is an amazing statistic. All of these statistics came from the Columbus Dispatch, April 27, 2013, in an article by Alan Johnson entitled "Ohioans Overdosing on Painkillers and Heroin." What we see here is the tragedy that ensues when an individual is involved in drug addiction. And so, a lot of times an individual who is addicted is also in denial, and so as family members are trying to intervene and do something to help them, that individual is aloof, makes excuses, plays all kinds of games, and so as a result of that, it's very, very difficult to get these individuals into treatment. It used to be, I thought, that you could develop an intervention type of a program and try to move somebody into the rehab. And the reality of it is that that fails many times, because if the individual is not committed to making the change, it isn't going to happen. And so now some of the individual groups like Mary Haven and others do not even do interventions. They wait for the individual to come to the point that they recognize they have a problem and then seek treatment for it and seek help. I think one of the reasons for that is that it's so expensive. And so it's time consuming, it's costly, and so you don't want to spend precious dollars on individuals who do not have the desire to change. And of course, sometimes the pain has to get so great before an individual will change that the pain of continuing in that behavior mounts and gets so great that they are then motivated by that pain to do something. But a lot of times they have to hit bottom, we say, And then by that time, they've lost their marriage, they've lost their jobs, they've lost their homes, they've lost everything, simply because they will not admit that they have a problem. And so tonight I want to give you some things that would at least be indicators and be helpful for you to be able to see sometimes what you may be up against. I did want to make mention of the fact that drug addiction is mentioned in the Bible. The abuse of alcohol and drugs, as we have said, is on the increase. And so then what would be God's view of this? Well, the unlawful use of drugs is prohibited by God's word. And when I say unlawful use, it is if it's against the law to use this drug, then Christians shouldn't be using it. In Romans chapter 13, verse 1 and 2, the powers that be are ordained of God. And the laws that they make are for the protection of individuals in order to protect us from the evil in the world and the evil one in particular. And so there are laws that we have in our land that actually protect us from harming ourselves and harming others. And that's one of the functions of government, and government is ordained of God. So if we disobey the government, we disobey God. That's verse 2. And so you need to read Romans 13, 1 and 2 and understand what Paul is saying there. We are to be subject to the higher powers inasmuch as those individuals are acting to protect the right and to punish the evildoer. Now, some drugs are permitted by law, such as alcohol in our country, prescription drugs, but are addictive and can be abused and oftentimes are, as we just saw with the statistics that I gave you in regards to prescription drugs. The abuse of any addictive drug is sinful, and the reason for that is that it violates biblical principles. So I'd like to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 6, and we're going to note a couple of verses here as we begin our thoughts in this lesson. What, know you not that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost, which is in you, which you have of God, and ye are not your own? Let's remember something. Christians have been redeemed by the blood of Christ. Redemption means blood bought. That means I belong to God. My body belongs to God. My spirit belongs to God. I am the Lord's possession by virtue of the fact that he's redeemed me. Now notice what Paul said. For you are bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. I think sometimes we think that our body is ours and we can do with it whatever we want to do. We can abuse it in any way that we want to abuse it. That's not correct. Our body belongs to God. And we should be able to use all of the members of our body to God's glory. Now, notice the verses here in verses 12 and 13. All things are lawful unto me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. Meats for the belly and the belly for meats, but God shall destroy both it and them. Now the body is not for fornication, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. So we begin to see that one of the things that Paul says here is that in regards to the lust of the flesh, fornication is a sin against the body. And so he rules out fornication because the body belongs to God, and we shouldn't be using our body just for selfish ends in regards to satisfying the lust of the flesh. And you know as well as I do, we have a problem in America today with fornication, and sexual addiction is rampant in this country today. And pornography and things like that are very pervasive. And it is a secret sin oftentimes, and so individuals try to hide this, and so then that makes a Christian duplicitous, because on the outward appearance, they may be looking as if they're just a great Christian. And then inwardly, they're corrupt, and as a result of their corruption, they're pursuing the lust of the flesh in secret things like reading and looking at pornography. And so these are the kinds of problems that we face today. I think oftentimes a person involved in alcoholism or drug abuse is also trying to hide that and keep it a secret. And when family members are not transparent, they actually become enablers to those individuals. And they say, well, it's embarrassing, it's shameful, all of this kind of thing, so we hide it, right? Well, that actually exacerbates the problem. It makes the problem worse. And so what we need to do is hold individuals accountable who are involved in drug abuse and drug addiction. And so we see from these passages that we are to use our body and our spirits to glorify God and not to pursue the lusts of the flesh. In Galatians chapter 5, verses 19 through 21, Paul mentions drunkenness as a work of the flesh. In Ephesians 5 and verse 18, he said, "Be not drunk with wine, but be ye filled with the Spirit." And so rather than going through the process of inebriation, which begins with the first drink, Paul said, don't do that. Instead, be filled with the Spirit. There's something that you can be filled with and filled to overflowing, and it won't harm you, it'll bless you. And that is to be filled with the Spirit of God. So we have an alternative to drug abuse and alcoholism and things of this nature, and that is, in terms of the Christian, we pursue the things of God that are good and wholesome and holy and right, and there's no law against these things. I want to spend some time here tonight. I'm going to look at signs of addiction, and I'm going to give you 20 of these. And you might want to jot some of these things down. Some time ago, I read an article on this particular topic and found it rather interesting. And what I've done is kind of edited that and put it together in the lesson tonight. So let's look at these signs of addiction. First of all is quantity control. And that is, over time, a higher tolerance to alcohol or drugs leads people with addiction problems to increase the quantity and frequency of their substance of choice without showing signs of loss of control. So it takes more alcohol for me to become inebriated to the same point that I was before with less alcohol. And the same way with drug abuse. If you think of painkillers, I might have been able to get by with four or five or six a day, and then it's not very long until I'm having to double that. And of course, what happens with this is that you begin to see that the desire seeking alcohol or seeking these painkillers becomes a driving force in an individual. And if they don't have it, they become irritable, they become mean, unkind, all of these kinds of things, because they're going to get their drugs. And so they can even become violent. A lot of domestic violence today is directly attributable to drug abuse and addictions. And so as a result of that, we begin to see those names appearing in the paper, DUI. They say if you've had two or three arrests for being over the limit in terms of alcohol use, that you are an alcoholic. And so it doesn't take much to become a signal to individuals to say, listen, how do I know that there's a problem here? Well, how many times have the police been called? How many times have you been arrested for inebriation? And you can begin to see that legal record actually becomes testimony to say that you have a problem. Sometimes loved ones may have to use that information to lovingly confront an individual who's in denial in regards to having a problem as far as drug abuse or drug addiction is concerned. Number two, we call this hide and seek around the house. Pills may turn up in unexpected places. And so normally we would keep medicines in the medicine cabinet, right? But what if you start finding medicine and pills in places that are rather unusual? Well, that's a sign that somebody's addicted. And so if somebody were to threaten to take away their alcohol, they're going to have a stash of alcohol somewhere in the house that you don't know anything about. They've hidden it somewhere. And so you might be cleaning sometime and find alcohol stuck behind the towels. And wonder, why is there a bottle of alcohol behind the towels in the linen closet? That's not where you would normally find it. Yeah, that's a sign that you're dealing with an addict. Number three, we call this the disappearing act. Jewelry missing, money missing, camera missing. Yeah, somebody is selling these items in order to raise money so that they can buy drugs. Drug habits are very expensive. Alcohol is very expensive, especially when you're dealing with an alcoholic. And so here's somebody that is using and has to continue to use. And as we said in point number one, a higher tolerance is built up, and so they need more and more and more. As this problem progresses, it doesn't get better, folks. It gets worse. And if you think that somehow the day's going to come when this will just all disappear and the problem will be gone, that's not going to happen. We're dealing with a real sin problem here and servitude to sin. And until that servitude is broken, you're dealing with a downward spiral that's ultimately going to end in disaster. And so these are things we have to take seriously. Number four, we call this a head start. This is drinking before you go out with your friends to drink. So you drink at home, and you actually already started the process of inebriation. Then when you go out with your friends to drink, you just look like you're drinking as much as they did. Maybe they had a couple drinks, and you had a couple drinks. Then people then hide the fact that they have already had two or three drinks before they ever went drinking with their friends. And this is exactly what happens. And so this begins to become a problem where someone is hiding their addiction in a way that is sometimes difficult to detect. Number five, we have tricks of manipulation. Hiding an addiction leads to constant subterfuge, and so the addict becomes very adept at lying. As a matter of fact, they become pathological liars. The word pathological means that it's so serious that it interrupts relationships. And so, are you having trouble with your marriage relationship because you don't believe your spouse anymore? Because they're addicted to some substance? That may be, in fact, the reason why you can't believe them. So they lie about where they are and where they've been. They lie about who they've been with. They lie about where they got the money in order to buy more alcohol or to have more pills. And so, you know as well as I do, in terms of some of the prescriptions that you can get a 90-day supply. And most of us would know how many pills that would be. Well, if somebody starts using twice that many, that's a pretty good sign that they have a serious problem. And then they may start saying things like, well, I lost them, or when they filled the prescription, they didn't give me the full count. You know, some of them were missing, and all of this kind of thing. They're lying about these situations. Here's the thing. We become enablers when we start believing them. When we are duped as family members and we start believing the lies, or we want to believe the lies because that kind of makes the problem disappear as far as our mind is concerned, well, it really isn't going to disappear. It's going to just keep getting worse. So tricks and manipulation. Do you feel manipulated? Do you feel deceived? Do you feel lied to? All of these kinds of things start to happen, and you begin to see one problem leading to another problem, and then even another problem. Number six is the money magnet. Now, obviously, we said earlier that drugs are expensive. Bar tabs are too. And so are we having financial problems? Are you having trouble making the car payment? Are you having trouble making the house payment? Are you having trouble coming up with the money to pay for school fees and things like that? What happens is that addicts are going to use their alcohol, or they're going to use drugs to the detriment of the family finances. And so if you see that you're having trouble paying the bills, where's all the money going? Where's all the money going? Another thing is debt. Sometimes you can manipulate things, and the next thing you know, you're using a credit card to rack up debt and you're buying drugs. And so people do that kind of thing. So it's not only I can't make and manage my monthly expenses, but I'm also racking up a lot of debt. And I don't know where that money went to. I know an individual who had a $20,000 deficit. Where did the money go? There was no explanation for it. Do you think they might be using drugs? Yeah. And then the next thing you know, the marriage is facing calamity and crisis because there's a financial crisis that is going to ensue. Number seven is the clear choice. And of course, that is a reference to vodka. Vodka is a drink of choice by alcoholics because it's clear and looks like water. And so if you put it in a bottle, it just looks like, well, I'm just drinking some water. And you're not drinking water, you're drinking vodka. Vodka can also be mixed with other drinks. You can mix it with anything. You can mix it with iced tea. It just looks like I'm just having a glass of iced tea. Or I'm just having a glass of lemonade. Have you ever heard of hard lemonade? Well, if you add vodka to lemonade, you've got hard lemonade. And that's exactly what people do. So they choose vodka because it obviously makes them feel the way they want to feel. That's what the addict is looking for. But it's easily concealed. And so when you think about progression here and why people might make a choice for a particular type of an alcoholic beverage over another, this fits in pretty clearly. Number eight is what we call missing in action. Failure to show up at birthday parties or a graduation or some other important event. A person becomes unreliable and secretive. And a lot of times, as we'll see later, they're making excuses because they don't feel well. Well, a lot of times, people who are drug addicts are sick a lot. That's just a fact. And that's one of the signs. You know, you're calling off work sick. You're not showing up at family functions because you're not feeling good. And all of this kind of thing. Well, yeah. The problem is you're missing in action. You actually miss out on life. Another problem associated with this we'll see in just a moment is the fact that people who use sedatives like downers in terms of drugs or alcohol, which is also a sedative, they also sleep a lot. And so they sleep, maybe they sleep 8 hours a day, 9 hours a day. Hard to get them up and get them to work, you know, hard to get them to do anything. They're missing out on life. They're missing out on all the things that are beautiful and wonderful and the things that they should really be caring about. And the reality of it is they're addicted. So missing in action. Number nine is a narrower world. As addiction takes hold, it tends to block out other interests and activities that one time were important. Want to go fishing? No, not interested. Want to go hunting? No. Want to go play golf? No. You want to go shopping? No, don't want to do it. People start to develop a disinterest in life itself because they are so focused on the addiction that has a grip on them. And so as a result of that, their world starts getting real narrow. You see, they don't have very many friends. The friends that they do have are probably drinking friends or other people who are addicted to that are either friends or sources of pills or whatever they need. Marijuana, we mentioned heroin, cocaine. These people become their friends, and that connects them with a whole different group of people. And these people don't share the values of honesty and love and joy and happiness. They are cutthroat. They're interested in one thing, and that's money. And they're going to get it out of you one way or the other. And so this becomes real dangerous real quickly. And that's another aspect of this, is to look for violent eruptions to take place, and that's why the law gets involved, police are called. Next thing you know, you've got a real problem here because somebody is becoming more violent or they're associating with people who are violent. And so these individuals carry guns. It wasn't too long ago that we had a marijuana raid in the house just above our house on Lithopolis Road. They were growing marijuana in the basement of that house. And I just happened to be in the kitchen at the time. I was looking out the back door, and I saw a couple of sheriff's officers running through the yard with shotguns. Now, that's an unusual sight, right? And so I told Kathy immediately, something's up, and we need to be looking around and seeing what's going on. And then we begin to see police were everywhere. And they were in the fields, and they were on the road, and the police car was right down from us, and they had an individual there standing at the back of the car. So it was quite a bit of excitement. These individuals had guns. They were protecting their marijuana patch, which was growing in the basement of that house. So that house was for sale, by the way. But so far, nobody's bought it. And it might be a hard sell. I don't know. Anyway. What we're looking at here is the reality of what drug addiction involves. And so if you think it's just between the addict and the product, whatever it is, alcohol or the pills or whatever, that's not the case. Generally, the family's involved and the law is involved, policemen get involved, the courts are going to get involved, lawyers are going to get involved. The church is involved sometimes if we're talking about somebody who's a Christian. Next thing you know, this is a huge problem, and it's not going to just disappear. Number 10 is magic bottles, a bottle that never seems to get empty. Addicts hide bottles of alcohol in strange places, for instance, behind in the toilet tank, in the bathroom. And people put alcohol back there, or they put pills back there. Like I said, you could find these things in unusual places sometimes. The reality of it is that here is somebody who's trying to deceive, and so the manipulation, the tricks, all of these kinds of things start to emerge. Let's look at number 11. Can I try the diet you're on? Crystal meth, cocaine, and other uppers stimulate energy to the point that people feel that they can go without eating. A side effect of this is weight loss, a positive thing normally if you need to lose weight, but a sign of addiction in some cases. And so here's somebody that before, you looked at them, you saw them, they may have had a few extra pounds and things like that. Now, they're losing weight. And you wonder, well, why are they losing weight? And so addiction actually is a weight loss program, but it's not the one that anybody would recommend. I'm sure of that. Look at number 12, squeaky clean. Constant use of gum or breath mints. Somebody's trying to hide the smell of alcohol on their breath. And so they're constantly using something to mask the smells. It's kind of an interesting thing that people think that they can hide this, but in reality, you can't hide this. You know, if you're an addict, those physical signs of the addiction are going to start manifesting themselves, and this is where the self-deception comes in. They're not only lying to everybody around them, but they've lied to themselves over and over again, and so they think, you know, do you think you could smoke marijuana and somebody couldn't smell that? If you've ever smelled marijuana, it's one of the things in the drug abuse classes and things like that, and I've taken some of them in Perry County years and years ago. They actually allowed you to smell some of these things just so that you could get a sense of what the odor would be like. And so people think they can hide this kind of thing, but they really can't, and that's part of the self-deception. But that doesn't mean that they aren't going to try. Number 13 is the bathroom game. Prescription drugs are commonly found in the bathroom, and so when they visit at other people's homes and they go to the bathroom, they want to go to the bathroom. They ask to go to the bathroom. They ask where your bathroom is. And of course, people need to go to the bathroom from time to time, so we're not highly suspicious of that. But when they go to the bathroom, they're going through the medicine chest to see if there's any pills there. Now, it might be interesting after your company leaves to go to your bathroom and check out your prescription medications and see if any of them happen to be missing. Or the bottle still may be there, but half of your pills are gone, and you won't discover that until much later. And so these kinds of things happen. Number 14 is mood management. Many family members describe the emotional experience of living with an alcoholic or an addict as a roller coaster ride. You have an unstable mood, which makes individuals unpredictable in regards to what they would say or what they would do. And if you try to correct them, they're going to blame you for the troubles that they have. So they try to turn the tables on you and make you feel guilty and make you feel bad because you're trying to correct them and correct their behavior. And so then this becomes very difficult. If you try to put up a fight, then the violence escalates rather quickly. And next thing you know, police are going to be involved and we're going to have a case of domestic violence here. When individuals are inebriated, you cannot talk to them. You ever tried to talk to somebody who was drunk? How much truth do you think you're going to get out of somebody when they're high? It's not possible to talk to people unless they're sober, unless they have all of their wits about them and they have their mental faculties intact. And so the first thing that has to happen is that those individuals have to detox. If they would agree to go into a rehab treatment, the first few days would just be detox. And that would mean that they would have to come down from the high and try to work the alcohol or the effect of the drug out of their physical system before you could sit down and actually have an intelligent conversation with them. Imagine somebody who's high all of the time and you're trying to negotiate something with them, or you're trying to talk with them about problems in your marriage or problems, financial problems. It's impossible to do it. Now, people try to do it, you know, because it comes to the point where we got to talk about something. But if you're trying to talk to somebody that's inebriated, you've got an impossible task. Number 15 is sleeping sickness. Alcohol and many types of drugs are sedatives or downers, and so they make you sleep and sleep heavily. That's why many people who are addicts cannot hold down a job. And the reason for it is that they are sleeping most of the time. Or if they're trying to drive to work, they're driving impaired. And so the next thing you know, they've had an accident. You say, well, I wonder why they have an accident. So right back to the addiction. And so then that becomes a problem. Number 16 is pain that never ends. Back pain is one of the most common excuses for requests for more and more pain medication. A lot of doctors will prescribe that medication because they're compassionate and trying to meet the needs of their patient, and their patient's complaining about chronic back pain, but they don't have any back pain. They have an addiction that needs satisfied, and they use back pain or some other kind of a pain to be able to get more painkillers because they're addicted to them. And so when a patient says that only narcotics will work on his or her pain, it might be other therapies that you could give somebody for pain relief. You wouldn't have to take a narcotic, but there are certain individuals going to insist on a narcotic. Why? They're addicted to it. And so that becomes a sign too. Number 17 is sickness without a cause. Addicts often do not feel good. Well, they're weak. If they do not have either access to alcohol or the drugs, then they're not only weak, but they get jittery, they get irritable, all of this kind of a thing. They can have all kinds of stomach problems, irritable bowel syndrome, various other things, and so they're complaining about all these things. Oh, I have stomach problems. I have other kind of gastrointestinal problems. Well, yeah, you're not eating right. All you're doing is trying to live on alcohol, or you're trying to live on a drug, a painkiller, or whatever it might be. And so you can see why, as this addiction progresses, that it becomes life-threatening. Because the next thing you know, these people are going to start presenting with problems with their electrolytes. Well, they have low sodium, they have low potassium, they're dehydrated. And you say, well, I have all these physical problems. Well, why are you having all these physical problems? Well, you're addicted to a drug. So are you having to go to the doctor pretty often? Are you having to go to the ER? Are you having to go and get seek different kinds of treatments? And then, of course, that generally involves more medicine. I know individuals who go and say, you know, my medicine's not working for me. Doc, I need another kind of medicine. Next thing you know, they've got a 90-day supply of one kind of narcotic and a 90-day supply of another narcotic and a 90-day supply of another narcotic. Maybe they say, well, I don't like my doctor. So they switch to another doctor. And then they switch to another doctor. And they start playing the doctor game. And so the reason for it is that every time they go to the doctor, they get a new prescription for more meds. And those are the things that they're addicted to. And so, yeah, I'm having trouble getting along with my doctor. Yeah, once a doctor gets wise to that, he stops writing the prescriptions for your painkillers. And so then you're going to have trouble with your doctor, right away. And so this kind of thing, sicknesses without a cause. When you think about some of the chronic physical problems, we mentioned low energy, fatigue, depression. That's why these individuals have a hard time holding down a job. And yes, they become depressed because they're using and they feel lousy, and then they don't feel good about themselves because they're not holding down a job and they're not supporting themselves or their families. And so they're really not a very good person anymore. Yeah, that'd make me depressed too. Number 18 is paranoia and panic attacks. Attacks of paranoia are often associated with addiction. You feel like somebody's following you. Somebody's looking over your shoulder. Somebody is out to get you. And it's interesting how sometimes that can be accusations that are leveled against the preacher or the elders because they're visiting. It's like, well, you know, I don't like that David because he keeps coming around and he's just out to get me. And so paranoia, personality disorder, accompanies addictive behavior. And then we also mentioned panic attacks. Addicts can develop social anxieties. And this is why people start avoiding crowds. And of course, that means the assembly, right? So one of the things we begin to see is that they don't come to church. And there isn't anything you can say to them that is going to get them to start attending the worship assembly. Because this addiction has such a grip on them that they turn a deaf ear to any appeals of love and goodwill, trying to get people to come to church and do the right thing. And then if they're in denial, that just complicates the thing altogether, because they don't really have a problem. So really, you have a problem. So they try to turn the tables on you and make you the guilty person. And so now the blame game goes on. Number 19 is the storyteller. And this is an individual that's adept at telling lies. And so they tell lies to their family members. They've told lies to their physician. They've told lies about why they can't get a job. They just are telling stories, and these stories can become elaborate manifestations if they think about different things as to what's going on. It's interesting here that in regards to our benevolent program, we have to be careful about the stories. And so someone shows up here, and they have just had a death, and it's up in Cleveland, and they need money in order to get gasoline, in order to go to Cleveland, in order to be able to help bury a loved one in the family. Well, that's interesting. Is it true? That's a big question. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not true. But I hear all kinds of stories. And I hear that one over and over again by different people. That's kind of interesting that they would have the same problem, different people, different times, but they have the same story. Maybe that's a tip-off that you're being used. The final thing I want to mention tonight is the blame game. And of course, denial produces the blame game, and so the addict doesn't have a problem. But everybody else has a problem. The addict doesn't have an attitude problem, doesn't have a drug addiction problem, doesn't have any problem. They're getting along just fine if you just leave them alone. But of course, you can't leave them alone because you have to talk about the finances, right? Or maybe they've been violent and you've had to call the police, or maybe they're going to the ER. You know, some of this becomes so chronic that there are certain ERs that know who these people are, and they refuse to treat them. So they make them go somewhere else to find help. And of course, then that's where you begin to see all of this guilt tripping we made mention of, that making other people responsible, making them feel guilty for why things aren't going good in my life. And then, of course, what you have to do there, if you're a loved one, is if you believe the lies, then you become part of the problem. And that's a person that's codependent or an enabler. And so as a result of that, they're giving them money. You want to give a drug addict money? It's a bad idea. I guarantee you that. You want to start paying their bills for them? Once you start, you'll never stop. Because until they resolve the problem with the addiction, your money's going to go right down the drain. And so it's a bad idea. You say, well, if I don't, then they're going to hit bottom, and then they're going to have to realize that they have a problem. Well, that's exactly what you want, right? You say, well, they might lose their house or they might lose their car. Probably the best thing that could happen to them. Do you want to save their soul or not? And see, we do a lot of these things because our pride and ego is at stake here, right? We can't allow these people to fail, especially if they're our children, because if we allow them to fail, then we've failed as parents. And that's why I said that we have to relinquish that, Mom. Sometimes we have to let go and let people face the consequences of the bad choices that they're making in life. The law of reaping and sowing. That's a biblical principle. We try to suspend that and make everything appear to be okay when it's a disaster. That's not going to help. And so sometimes we do those things because we say, well, we love them. And so we want to try to do that. But love defines the kind of help that really makes a difference. And when we're just paying the bills of an addict, we're not giving them the kind of help that is really going to make a difference in their life. And so sometimes the best help is for them to discover that they are the problem, that they have a problem, and that they need to do something about it. And until they come to that point, there's really nothing much that anybody can do. They have to wake up. Sort of like the prodigal son, right? Eventually he came to himself and realized that there was another pathway for his life. Well, Everybody who's ever recovered from addiction has discovered that for themselves. They have awakened to the reality that they have a problem. If you think about the 12-step program, the very first step is to admit, I am an alcoholic. I am a drug addict. The very first step. And if people will not take that first step, then there's no way that we can make it happen for them. Their will has to be involved in it. And then they have to seek a higher power in order to be able to help them out of the grip of the servitude of sin. Tonight we have said drug and alcohol addiction are serious problems. Denial of these problems only makes the problem worse. If you believe that a loved one is abusing a drug, here's some things that you might want to do. Talk to him or her in a loving but firm way about the problem when they're sober, okay? Don't do it when they're inebriated or under the influence of drugs. Seek professional help. You're going to need the help of your doctor. You need a professional counselor who specializes in the treatment of addictions. The minister can help you in terms of spiritual things. Hospitals, there are drug treatment programs, there are AA programs. Many people have been helped as a result of these programs once they have admitted that they have a problem and seek that help. Ultimately, strengthen your own relationship with God, because you're going to need God, you're going to need your faith, you're going to need love for God, you're going to need every spiritual quality of the graces. You talk about temperance, which is self-control, patience. And I mentioned love because love beareth all things. And if you're in a situation in which you have a loved one who's an addict, you're going to be bearing up under a tremendous amount of stress and pressure and difficult times and difficult situations. The reality of it is we can overcome, but we have to make good choices in order to do that. That comes down to the human will, being willing to surrender to God's will. And that, of course, involves our conversion. If you're here tonight and you've never obeyed the gospel, we want to encourage you in these words to become a New Testament Christian. I know it's difficult sometimes to make real significant changes in our life. Sometimes the motivation for it is pain. And so if you go back to saying, well, why should we allow consequences to ensue or to follow? It's because the pain has to get to a threshold level that then motivates an individual to do something about their life. The tragedy is that a lot of people perish. They're on a pathway of self-destruction and they don't make it. They don't make it. And that's sad if it's a loved one, but it happens. And so God has created us with free will. If we make a series of bad choices, then it can lead to really bad results in our life. The worst thing that can happen to anybody is that they would lose their soul. And we certainly wouldn't want that for a loved one. But then it's not about us, is it? It's about them. What do they want for their life? And we have to let them make that choice. And then we live with the consequences.